Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a brand new season of the Women's Footy Podcast here at Big Footy. And joining me, as always, for these things, I've got Peter Holden from Girls Play Footy Radio. Peter, it was a massive weekend for women's footy. Whatever the detractors have to say about it, there's no escaping that it was a huge weekend for footy and women in general.
Indeed it was, and my view on Friday night was a gate, a closed gate. I was one of 5,000 locked out of Princess Park, and I think it's the first time ever I've been locked out of a venue, and I've actually been happy that I'm locked out of the venue, because that meant, oh my God, the place is full, they've done it.
It really does make you, it really is baffling how the AFL thought that game could be played at Olympic Park in the first place, really.
When they talked about Olympic Park, I think they were a bit conservative early on, thinking almost like they knew they could definitely get 5,000 at Olympic Park and pack that out. I think they were just cautious that they wanted to have it there, that if they didn't think they'd get more than 6,000 or 7,000, at least they could say, whew, first game was a sellout, that's great. But once it started building up and building up and building up, all the media coverage through the week at about 2 weeks out, I think they realised, I think we can safely get more than about 10,000, and then try and find me a person that generally would have said 24,500 and turned away at the gate.
Yeah, I mean, even we were talking about this before, but just even during the lunch, the AFL were apparently telling people that they were still only expecting about 15,000. I mean, I predicted, you know, somewhere between 5,000 to 10,000. 10,000 would have been a great crowd, I said on Big Footy earlier in the week. But to have 24,000 turn up and turn away thousands at the gate, Carolyn Wilson said on Offsiders yesterday morning that Gillon McLachlan was trying to get the police to let people come in and sit around the boundary like it was, you know, the 50s again. But apparently the Victorian police were not overly impressed with that. But yeah, it was the police that ordered the lockout. If it was up to the AFL, more people would have got in.
Well, Gillon McLachlan came out at halftime and apologised to fans, and as a few people said, it looked like he'd been on the sauce, and I wouldn't have blamed him if he had a few drinks to celebrate that night.
I think everyone at the AFL would have been going, well, hang on, this might actually work. Because I think the worst thing that could have happened is that for, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 people to have turned up at Princess Park after they moved the game. So, in the end...
And the great news is you follow on where nearly a full house at Theberton, where it was 9,500 there.
In the rain.
You had 10,100 at Witten Oval, and that's between the Bulldogs and the interstate side. And Melbourne and the Brisbane Lions at Casey Fields, where I got drowned.
And
6,500.
And it was predicted rain as well. Like, they predicted thunderstorms possible in the afternoon. So it wasn't like people turned up not expecting the rain. It was forecast, so big.
And the interesting thing was, until the lightning hit, which gave a bit of confusion because people didn't know what was going on when they came off the ground early, it was bucketing rain at that stage, but people were still staying there. People still had the brollies up, and they weren't moving an inch.
So it was a week of interesting and sometimes dramatic things. But let's perhaps get to the first game, Pete. And Carlton and Collingwood, Princess Park, as we've established, lockout crowd, massive crowd. Nearly a million people watched this on TV as well. A nice crowd there, and a nice TV audience that the AFL would have been very happy with for the season opener. Carlton running out in the end by 35 points over the Pies. Carlton's defence holding up very well with Brianna Davey and their forward. I'm trying to figure out how to get Darcy Vesio into the into Carlton's forward line to replace Eddie Betts.
She was absolutely brilliant. And I tell you one thing, though. That game completely shot my tips to bits because, A, I predicted Collingwood to go through the season undefeated. That was just absolutely shattered with that scoreline. And Darcy Vesio, I generally had questions on her going into the game because she, you know, when she played at Darabin, played the Western Bulldogs, she was always the second or third forward because at Darabin, she played alongside Katie Brennan. She had McDonald out or Hammond out of the goal square. She had a quality midfield like the Pierces, the Paxmans, the O'Days, the Arnells to deliver the football. And it was like, oh, geez, with some of those players gone and now she's the number one forward, can she go another level? Can she do it? And, well, she did. And on the other side for the Magpies, geez, their forward line structure might have to be looked at. They've got all these guns in the forward line, but they elected to try and almost go like a one out to Mo Hope, who was being worn smartly by two players, one of them the veteran in Laura Attard from Diamond Creek.
Also, a good performance there from Lauren Arnell, up around centre-half forward for the Blues. I thought she played really well. And also, her name escapes me at the moment.
Bianca Jacobson.
Bianca Jacobson, thank you. And also, Lauren Brazel.
Yeah, Brazali. Brazali from Diamond Creek as well. Limited disposal for her, 9 kicks, 2 hand passes, 2 hand... 2 marks and 4 tackles. Lauren Arnell, I've got to keep singing the praises of, because she's won 8 flags at Darab, and she's a veteran, been around for years. And, you know, I reckon she was almost coasting about 2 years ago, but she stepped up a gear about mid-last year, particularly when she had a best-on-ground performance playing for the Bulldogs against WA in an exhibition game. And I just got a feeling for a few players like her around that age, this whole new competition's all of a sudden just re-energized them of, oh my goodness, there's another goal, there's another challenge for me, there's another level to go.
I thought Emma King played well in the ruck for Collingwood.
Yeah, indeed. I know a few people question it, going, oh, but didn't Carlton have more combined hitouts? Yes, Carlton, Ruckman, Lutcher's down. He had 16. Brown, Moody had 14 hitouts. Schleich only had 7 hitouts for Collingwood. But Emma King, 20 hitouts, did the job again, did what she's there for as being a marquee player. She is a threat to be dealt with throughout the whole competition. But there are others coming for her throne, which we'll talk about in the coming games.
And Jasmine Garner, first goal in the competition.
Jasmine Garner, of course, from the St Kilda Sharks. She's the number 2 forward there. Essentially, what she does is she tries to push up around the centre-half forward area and try and present a marking target. Sometimes she'll drop back to maybe 40 out. I'm surprised one thing with Garner, though, is that particularly when Mo Hope was struggling to get the football because she was being double-teamed, I thought they would have gone, right, let's go Garner to the goal square and let's push Mo up the ground, because Mo's quite agile, and let's bomb it in long to Garner. And if Garner can stay in the goal square, if she can't take a mark, but at least hold it up in that 20-30 metre area out from goal, someone like Mo, who's then mobile, running away from those players that are spotting her, she should be able to then to scoop it up and kick a goal. I just didn't feel the tactics were right by the Magpies going into this game.
And no reports coming out of this game either, but there were some injury concerns on the night. Do you know how that's panned out at all?
We haven't heard any more, except that I know Stephanie Chiocci's just been smarting a few stitches above the head. So for her, that it's not going to look quite good, but it will mean that she'll be ready to play next week.
Now, the Blues go on to play GWS next week. GWS, are they getting their star players back next week?
That'll be interesting to see. I reckon Swanson will be back. Fourth is obviously gone for the year. And Louise Stevenson, there was talk about her not coming back until about round 5. So she's quite a long way away. They've always been struggling for stars. When I wrote about them, I virtually put it down to the recruiting hadn't been great. They hadn't recruited any genuine match winners. And when I talk about match winners, I'm talking about Davey Arnell, the Vessios from Carlton's. I'm talking about the likes of Katie Brennan, Emma Carney from the Western Bulldogs. Those type of players who can kick a couple of goals, dominate a quarter, and turn the game on its head. GWS haven't recruited that. They don't have those players. And if they thought they were in for a rough time against Adelaide, Adelaide's not even really doesn't have a strong list, they are going to find it extremely tough against Carlton.
And Collingwood, of course, go on to play the Demons next week. That venue yet to be determined, currently scheduled for Olympic Park, but will obviously be moved, as I expect most games to be moved from Olympic Park now.
It comes down to an interesting question, that one. There's two venues and two thoughts. One is it could go to Icon Park to be a doubleheader with the Carlton GWS game. And, of course, I guess the AFL are wondering, geez, if we make it a doubleheader, will some people stay away because they think, oh, can I squeeze in? And will people leave after one game or stay behind? You know, how does that all work? I wouldn't be surprised because Victoria Park, I think, is available and could easily hold 10 to 15,000 there. I think the issue that might come down to Victoria Park, if no one's obviously been using it for cricket, if it's just football only, is the Yarra Council. And they haven't exactly been the most helpful council going around.
We also think that it might be a little bit too run down at the moment.
Yeah, so I know they have played night junior football there, but they obviously have to, like Icon Park, bring in some better lights to get it up to standard. But it'd be great if it was Vic Park. It'd be old school football. You know, you're at Carlton for a twilight game, and you walk down the road to go to Vic Park to watch another game. But yeah, we'll just wait and see what the call is.
I think that might be part of the why it's taking so long is that if it was going to be at Princess Park and they'd decided that already, they would have just decided it would have been announced already. I think they've spent the day looking at Victoria Park going, well, can we do this?
One of the issues is if they try to do like Collingwood Carlton, flip the fixture to the other team being the home team, if they try to put it out at Casey Fields on a Saturday night, Casey Fields isn't a great ground to get to by public transport. And as I said, 6,500 were there for Melbourne and Brisbane, but that's, you know, Melbourne versus an interstate team. Two Victorian teams there would absolutely jam the place. And as I said, the transport out there, particularly on a Saturday evening, isn't the greatest, even though night VFL games have been played there.
Yeah, I would be surprised if they tried to schedule one of these night women's games out there for this year, at least, with the interest that's going on at the moment. Now, the second game that was played was in Adelaide, of course, at Theberton Oval, or the Barton Oval, as it was called on Women's Footy TV yesterday.
Oh dear, someone sent Roz Lanigan an email. Look, I won't hang on it. I did the same mistake. I lived in Adelaide only for about a month, and I think I lived in SA in total for about a year or so. I made the same mistake. I saw, only because I saw the name above a place which looked like a theatre, I thought, oh, they're calling it the Barton Theatre, are they? And then it's like, oh, no, it's Thebe, the Barton.
Thebe. GWS, kind of got trounced in the end by Adelaide. How did you see it in the end?
Adelaide wasn't even playing the greatest of footy in the world because, like, Erin Phillips, who ended up with 3 goals, 3 in the end, she missed a couple of sitters early. And when she missed those sitters early, it was all kind of like, oh, dear.
Started with 3 points.
Yeah, exactly. But then after the first one off the ground, finally got going, which was great to see. Ebony Marinoff was all class again. 20 disposals for her, 13 kicks, 7 hand passes, 2 marks, 6 tackles as well. Put that one in the bank. Really, for the GWS Giants, there was not much going for them. Nicola Barr, who's been all class, 13 disposals for her, 9 kicks, 4 hand passes, 1 mark and 5 tackles. Their captain, Ferrugia, was up there amongst the best. So was Jess Delpos and Phoebe McWilliams, some of their recruits. GWS are going to find it a struggle. I'm surprised with Adelaide, though, that I think the bookies have put them like third favourite now for the flag. And it's like all the experts have said, we knew this Crows-GWS game was essentially the battle of the wooden spoon. The Crows might get lucky. They might nick the Brisbane Lions or one Melbourne team along the way. That could be a possibility, but they don't have the list of the Crows to threaten the flag. That's something you don't have to sweat on.
The problem was there was a lot of unknowns. I mean, Carlton weren't the highest rated of the Melbourne sides at the start with. In fact, they were probably the lowest rated of them from their drafting. If you looked around at the predictions at the start of the year, I think I had them like third or something. So.
Yeah, and the thing is with the Crows, though, the one player that they did pick up that's already got the cult following, Tex Perkins.
Yep.
Sarah Perkins, 8 disposals, 6 kicks, 2 hand passes, 3 marks, and 1 tackle for 1 goal. She did present and finally got rewarded. And it does beg the question that, you know, they've got her along with Phillips as a forward options there now at the Adelaide Crows. When we get to Melbourne and talk about them, you go, how did the Victorian clubs, particularly Melbourne, who needed a key forward, pass on Perkins, who was number 3 on the Victorian Women's Football League goal kickers list? She kicked 50-plus for the year. She was only behind Brennan and Mo Hope.
And I think it boils down to the... And you're loath to say it, but I think it boils down to the fact that she wasn't fit.
Yeah, she's...
And even though she lost... She's lost a lot of weight, apparently, but as we were told repeatedly during the broadcast, 40 kilos since June.
yeah, I seen her when she was a bigger girl. And she's really taken it seriously, and you know, trying to get it down and get to you know the shape that's right for her. And again, you know, because you have a lot of recruiters that you know we have these NAB draft camps and whatever. They're going, oh, we're measuring this and we're measuring that, and if you don't do your beep test by this or your fat test, you mustn't be a good footballer. You know, as a Carlton supporter, you had Greg Williams, who was slow as anything, but was a champion.
But he probably wouldn't get a game today.
Look at Plugger Lockett. Look at Plugger Lockett. You know, fat bloke on the forward line, kicks more than 1,300 goals. At the end of the day, doesn't care what someone looks like. They kick goals. Guess what? The end of the day, you got to kick goals to win games.
So for the Crows, Ebony Marinoff apparently had a really good game as well.
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, 20 disposals, 13 kicks, 7 hand passes, 2 and, marks, 6 tackles.
For me, I like to keep an eye out on the big men, or the big women, as the case was. Rhiannon Metcalf had a good game in the ruck there, dominated really, 17 hitouts.
17 hitouts for the Crows. Up against the nearest best was Aaron McKinnon for the Giants with 5. So, you know, you look at the Giants list and you go, it's going to be a long season, because I'll throw you a stat. Most of the Giants list is made up of New South Wales ACT footballers.
Yeah.
The New South Wales ACT side has played 3 state games in the last 2 years. The highest score they've kicked is 4 goals, 4:28, and that was playing the longer 20-minute quarter game. So if you're not scoring any more than 4 goals a game, and not scoring, you know, break it down, more than 1 goal a quarter. You've never kicked more than 1 goal a quarter. You're not going to win games of football.
No. The Crows, they're going to have a nice matchup Friday night against Footscray at the Western Bulldogs at the Witten Oval.
Yeah, that game is going to tell a few stories there. I think Western Bulldogs will romp that one in. But yeah, that will start to paint the picture for everyone about where the lie of the land is in this competition. 2 good games, actually, that round. Western Bulldogs, Crows, and then the Sunday game with Freo and Brisbane Lions. There's some games where we get to sort things out. And then again, Collingwood, Melbourne as well. That game, you know, between 2 sides that have lost and scored the same amount of points, you go, okay, now we're starting to, you know, we'll start to find out who really sits where.
Unfortunately, I think GWS are going to get massacred on Saturday. And I'm not just saying that as a Carlton supporter, but just watching the way they played on the weekend and watching how Carlton played Friday night, they are poles apart at the moment.
If you're a betting person, it's time to go pick the margin.
Yes, as Messenger likes to say, this game you probably want to put your kids to bed before watching. So, moving on to 9,200 people turned up to watch this game at Adelaide. Very impressive, given that Theberton Oval hasn't seen a lot of use in the last 20 years since West Torrens moved to Woodville Oval when they merged with Woodville some years ago.
Well, it's a great thing. It's the great thing about this competition is the reinvigoration of these suburban grounds. So, you know, sides are, you know, are really, really happy to, you know, because, you know, a small crowd there, 10,000 looks great. 10,000 like in an Etihad Stadium in Adelaide Oval or Subiaco looks kind of poor, but it just looks right and it feels right. And as someone said, it's also connecting the footy clubs back with their community again, which I think people are really enjoying. And I know that, I know for a fact that some other suburban venues are putting their hand up for interest. I know that, for example, the Port Melbourne Football Club have kind of, you know, made an interest that they want to host, you know, more games of football, Women's League. Now, whether that's the Victorian Women's League or whether they say, hey, we could be good for the AFL Women's competition for small drawing crowds. You know, these kind of suburban venues are getting a new lease of life because of this competition.
I'm not sure Port Melbourne could host 25,000 people.
Well, no, but to be fair, Port Melbourne now could probably hold about 8,000 or 9,000, and they actually have the permits for Northport Oval to build lights there. It's just they've never had the money to do it, because originally they got the permits because the old Optus C7 channel were going to hold Monday night VFL there and have it under lights. But if someone stumps up, one of the AFL stumps up the money and gets the lights in there, they've got the permit, it's near the ground, and, you know, 8,000 or 9,000... a capacity is ideal for, like we had at Casey Fields, a Melbourne Brisbane Lions type drawing crowd.
Now, the third game of the round was Saturday night, the blockbuster clash, if you like, between the Western Bulldogs and Fremantle, two of the higher rated sides in the competition. Although Fremantle did lose the opportunity to recruit a number of West Australians who defected to other places. In the end, a similar margin to the previous two games, which is in itself worthy of comment perhaps later, but 32-point win here to the Bulldogs in the end. How did we go with this one?
The tip was right. I was surprised it was that wide, but I was going with the Bulldogs. There was a little bit of hesitation from me about how's Brendan going to pull up for two reasons. One, because she had knocked her ankle in the practice match against Collingwood, and I saw a limp off from that game. I thought, oh, geez, you know, if she's limping, she could be found out here. But she seemed okay. She went up against Ebony Antonio in a fantastic battle, and a special shout-out to Jason Bennett from Channel 7, who pumped up the Brennan Antonio rivalry. That way I know he's been reading girlsplayfooty.com, because I've been pumping up that rivalry for about 2 years now, going, these two are the perfect matchup. They're the Carey Jakovich. They just go toe-to-toe. And I tell you what, in the first quarter, Antonio had it over Brennan. Brennan could not get near the pill. But after quarter time, someone sent out the search and rescue party. Antonio went missing and Brennan went on a merry way, racking up 16 disposals and two goals.
Yeah, so the highly rated players for the Bulldogs there, like your Katie Brennan, Ellie Blackburn, Astro O'Connor, they all featured in the goal kicking there. For Fremantle though, girls like Cara Dunellan didn't really feature much. But then again, for Fremantle, who did in this particular game in the end?
Well, Smith pulled out 17 disposals, 12 kicks, 5 hand passes. Dunellan, 16 disposals, 10 kicks and 6 hand passes. But I think a number of them were in defence while they were under pressure. Emma Carney for the Western Bulldogs, 23 disposals, 14 kicks, 9 handballs, 2 marks, 1 tackle, and at the moment, a better midfielder than Daisy Pierce. There, I said it. Controversial. At the moment, a better midfielder than Daisy Pierce.
So you are caught in controversy, because she's the darling of football. She is the face of football, really, until recently when Mo Hope took that over.
Indeed. I'll talk about her game for Melbourne a little bit later on. But Emma Carney has been underrated for a couple of years. She, for some reason, never gets in the 1, 2, or 3 position in the votes. And I don't know why. Maybe because she gives a bit of lip out on the ground. She's known for a bit of sledging, Emma, being a cricketer, and dishes it out a bit. So maybe that she didn't qualify for the fairest bit under the Best and Fairest Award. But Emma is a great footballer, highly underrated. She racked up 37 disposals in a losing grand final side for Melbourne Uni back in September. Jet of a player, great speed. And it was said, her racking up 23 disposals is 2 weeks after playing for the Melbourne Stars in the Women's Big Bash.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That's an incredible switch. You know, 2 weeks later, I'm playing cricket. Now I'm playing football, and I'm starring at this level as well.
So it's somewhat ironic that two of the best on-ground candidates from the weekend were just recently playing other sports.
Indeed, and I think they said with Emma Carney, she's the first person to play both elite cricket and football since Craig Bradley did in the 90s.
It's been a while. And at the same time, Aaron Phillips was playing basketball in the Olympics a couple of weeks ago, months ago now. So yeah. it's all hands on deck. 10,100 at this game at Witten Oval. So about 4,500 more than watched the exhibition game last year. So not a bad turnout at all. Not quite lockout territory, but not far off.
It's interesting. They said on the 7 coverage, if it got to 10,000, they were going to lock the gates. So they got the 10,100. So it looked like they could squeeze in a little bit more there. But that is fantastic that they've got over 10,000 people, because this is an interstate game as well. The Doggies taking on an interstate side. And to be honest, there's not too many Frio supporters in Melbourne.
No.
So that is fantastic for the Western Bulldogs. I think they've got something like 4 games in a row at Witten Oval, and they're having a festival of football there. So if they reckon that was big, the Crows one, again, they could push 10,000. But wait, coming up, I think they've got both Melbourne and Collingwood at Witten Oval. That is going to test capacity in a couple of weeks.
It's one of those games that they may be looking at moving, although I think the Western Bulldogs might try and fight that a lot. moving on to the last game of the round, and this was at the very blustery Casey Fields. It was noted that it was windy beforehand, before the game had even started, and there was predicted wind and rain and the wrath of God and whatnot, because, you know, it's Casey and they deserve it out there. But very tight early, just very minimal scoring, and then moving on. Sabrina Frederick-Taube, I thought, looked very dangerous early if she could kick straight. But in that weather, you can't really blame her for not doing it, and then she picked up in the second half. But this was the lowest scoring game of the round, only 4 goals to the winners. 7 goals was a traditional amount for winners in this game. And I say traditional because everyone else did that. But Shannon Campbell, Sabrina Frederick-Taube, Brittany Gibson, Kate McCarthy, Jessica Wuchner, all featuring in the, Wuchner only kicked a point, but they all featured in the goal kicking over there for Brisbane. Well, Jasmine Grierson, Rochelle Cranston, Alyssa Mifsud, Lily Miffin, all in there for Melbourne.
Can I say it's the first time I've gone out to Casey Fields in a while and had a hot dog out there and not felt crook. So well done to the Casey staff. They finally got that right.
Well done to 6,500 people who went out there knowing what the weather was going to be like, knowing that there's only seating for 350 people in the quote unquote grandstand.
The grandstand was saved for VIPs only as well. So, you know, a little bit of class warfare going on there at the ground. That was rubbish. The public, I'd say the paying public, but of course no one paid to get in. Yeah, they were all standing around getting soaked. Luckily, I managed to find some get under the shade cloth area and try and be protected from the rain. But the one thing is, and this was really interesting as well, and I think a lot of people saw it at many games, and I got to witness it firsthand at Casey Fields, is a few people like politely clapped, didn't know what to cheer or do in the first or second quarter. Obviously, everyone cheers when there's a goal. But finally, in the final quarter, when things really got tense and the game was on the line, the Melbourne supporters started firing up just like a normal men's game. Every time there was a hit. And then twice you hear the Melbourne, clap, 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 Melbourne. They finally, it happened. It went from, oh, what are we watching, to, okay, we're now in the game. We're now treating this the same way as we treat a men's game.
So looking at the possessions there, Karen Paxman topping the table with 24, Daisy Pierce, Elise O'Day, 19 and 18, respectively. Lily Miffin up there, Mel Hickey, McDowney, and Shelley Scott for the Ds. The top for Brisbane, Emily Bates with 13, along with Brittany Gibson, Alexandra Anderson, and Caitlin Ashmore. They got 12 each. Jessica Wuchner with 12, and Samantha Verdko there with 11. So it does look like, just briefly there, that the Ds dominated possession.
Yeah, they did, and I guess this puts it into a whole new question of what do we read into stats? You know, if you're a Darabin and Paxman gets 24 disposals, Pierce gets 19, Elise O'Day gets 18, you look at that, you're thinking, oh my goodness, they're flogged aside. And then when you look that they've got all those disposals for a return of one goal, something's up. Something is seriously up. Maybe it's forward line structure. Maybe it's because there's a few clangers. One of our girls play footy staff, who was just sitting back at home watching the game, he noted that he said that he reckons that two of Pierce's clangers resulted directly in goals to the Brisbane Lions. So this is something that we have to sit down at. You know, if anyone said, oh, Daisy Pierce, best on ground, 19 votes, it's like, no, you're drinking from the Kool-Aid. If you've got 19 disposals and your side has only kicked one goal and you've lost by 3 goals, what's going on? You really have to dig further into that stats and go, something's not right here.
Indeed. I'll just hold you up there for a second. I'm going to try and add someone to the convo, Peter. Just bear with me a second. Yep. See if this works. Not yet. All right, so I'm going to have to do some editing. I hate editing. Pete, geez, as I'm losing my voice, either that or I'm my voice is breaking. Bit old for that, I think. Where's my notes? Where are we? Pete, it seems there were some reports from the weekend. A couple of players will be missing next week by the look of it. The AFL announcing today that 3 players were charged after the weekend. Ebony Antonio will be a big miss if she takes the week, which I suspect she will, because if you don't, you still get done. 2 weeks is a long time to miss from the season. Also, Kirsty Lamb from the Bulldogs can take the 1 week if she pleads guilty for rough conduct against Akek Mukur Thingamajee, whose name I can't pronounce.
Ciao.
Thank you. and Melbourne's Rochelle Cranston was also charged with front-on contact. So that's that new rule for women that makes that chest area sacrosanct, apparently. And so she can too take a week, apparently.
Yeah, apparently a few people not happy online about that. And I think there's been, hashtags of free Rocky and stuff like that. they go, oh, hey, what the heck's all this about? But it's interesting to note that there is no fines system in the women's league because, A, they're not getting paid a heck of a lot. So they've made the system of where you can be suspended up to one match or up to two matches, etc. So if you do get found by the MRP, there is no fines, but there is suspension.
I think they basically figured out that the women aren't getting paid enough to charge them fines as well. So, you know, you don't want to take their pocket money.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. Because if you did and they were left with stuff, well, just imagine the outrage.
Mm. Round two coming up. And obviously Friday night, this game won't be televised this week, but it will be on Fox Hill, won't be on 7. This game at the Witten Oval between the Western Bulldogs and Adelaide, candidate for game of the round for sure. Both sides undefeated as of now. You'd have to have the Bulldogs as favourites, wouldn't you, for this?
I'm going into this game saying Bulldogs to take this one comfortably. And when I say comfortably, we could be pushing the 50-point margin here. South Australian football has got a weakish list. They, as I said, Phillips has come to the side. They've got Gibson. They've got Randall, which has helped strengthen them up a little bit. But against this class Western Bulldogs effort that put away Fremantle with ease, I'm predicting the Doggies to win comfortably on Friday night. And as well, we should mention, as you said, it's on Fox Footy, but if you're in South Australia, it is live on 7 in Adelaide only.
Yeah, so, for some reason, only Adelaide and Perth are getting these local games. So,
indeed. And also as well, on radio, AFL Live, which is Crop Media, SEN and ABC are also doing the game.
Mm. Now, Saturday afternoon, this game currently scheduled for 5 p.m, but maybe moved if there's a doubleheader at Princess Park. Carlton have GWS. As I've said earlier in the cast, I'm predicting a massacre here.
Yeah, Carlton is just going to take GWS to the cleaners. This is going to be one-way traffic. Will it be a really big win? Who knows? It'll be interesting to get into the thinking of Damien Keeping's head. Will it just be a case of, let's win the first quarter quite comfortably, know that we're in control of the game, and then throw things around? And I think that's what he might do. Because it's such a short season, he might see this as, okay, this is the chance to just experiment with a few things before we carry on with the rest of the season.
Mm. And Collingwood-Melbourne, the battle of the two losers.
this is very interesting. And, you know, again, you know, Melbourne's forward line struggled to operate, and you've got a strong back line that Collingwood has, even though they got opened up by Carlton. I reckon in this game you're going to see Collingwood rebound better, and I still think Melbourne's going to have trouble getting on the scoreboard. And I say that because I saw that Collingwood pushed the Bulldogs in a practice game, so I think Collingwood are more likely to take this game out wherever they play it, because currently it's 7:30 p.m. on a Saturday night, live on 7, live on Fox Footy, no radio coverage, but we don't know what ground yet, as we record this on a Monday night.
Mm. Now, Sunday's the game that interests me off the round, really, because it's Fremantle and Brisbane, and this game is in Fremantle. You've got a Fremantle side that did okay, but didn't, they lost, but you've got a Brisbane side that they did okay, but they've got a very, very dangerous forward line as well. No Ebony Antonio likely for Fremantle. So whether that helps or hinders Brisbane's forward line, which if they get started is going to be very tough to beat.
This game live on 7, mate, in Perth, 4 p.m. local time, nationally on Fox Footy. And if you're in Perth as well, on the radio, Mix 94.5 are doing the game. Like you said, the door's open on this one. It could be the Lions pinch this one. I mean, when I saw the Lions against Melbourne, they weren't what I call overly impressive, or you know, when they won by 3 goals, it wasn't like a dominant 3-goal win. They had to really fight and scrap for it. Up against a Frio side that's going to be hurting from their loss to the Bulldogs, I want to tip the Lions just to get that sense of an upset, but better judgment says Frio on their home deck. And one quick note as well, I'll be interested to see what the crowd is like at Fremantle Oval, because I can't believe the FFA have gone and done this. When this game gets underway at 4:05 on a Sunday afternoon, 25 minutes later in Perth, it's the W League Grand Final between Perth Glory and Melbourne City. I don't know why the FFA did that, because they just... I know they were going to hold it on a Sunday, but to run at the same time, they only just announced that last night.
I'm not... Well, the game... The grand finals are normally played on a Sunday after Sunday evening for their broadcaster. I'm not sure whether that normally applies to the W League, but it's interesting.
I think the crowd will certainly more go to Aussie rules than a soccer match, but yeah, it's like, why split the audience? Why split the theatre going crowd? Why split the TV audience? You know, it's just, you know, you got to scratch your head. And the funny thing is as well, and I believe that, you know, and we've already seen the results from Saturday Night Football versus the Melbourne Derby, where more watched the women's game on Fox than the Melbourne Derby soccer clash. You're going to find that here, that I reckon a bigger crowd and a bigger TV audience will watch Frio versus the Lions. That's just going to embarrass the FFA, you know.
Well, we'll see how we go. My concern about this round is that there's a real possibility that if there's some, if Carlton flog GWS and the Bulldogs comfortably beat Adelaide like we've predicted here, that this could really affect how crowds and ratings go for the remaining 5 rounds of the season. So, floggings aren't in anyone's interest. So I'm not saying we're hoping for them. It's just based on what we've seen so far, and we haven't seen a lot. Is that
the hope is for the free-to-air network on Seven is that the Saturday night game will be Collingwood and Melbourne, so on paper that should be close, so the biggest audience watching will be watching hopefully the close game, so that should keep everyone going. Okay, other two games were blowouts, but oh, here was a close one. Oh, okay, you know, now league sorting out, we know where everyone sits. The week after, the Seven game is Bulldogs-Melbourne, which, again, that could be one-sided depending on how things go. After that, then there's Bulldogs-Collingwood. They've had a close practice match. The next TV game after that is Crows-Lions. That could be a close game. Crows-Melbourne could be a close game. And then the last one is GWS-Bulldogs, which will be very one-sided. So two one-sided games at Seven are going to show. The rest, hopefully, on paper, should be close.
Well, we're hoping for a big game. Well, another big week of football. And thanks for coming on, Peter. And we will talk to you hopefully next week.
Always a privilege. And thanks for having me on. And don't forget, you can download also Girls Play Footy podcast via iTunes. And we're on air on RSN Carnival Digital Radio in Melbourne, 6 p.m. Wednesday night.
Thanks very much.